from KUAR News in Little Rock. Welcome to another look at the week that was in Arkansas news and politics. Dominating the headlines this week,
the governor's solution to the impasse over Medicaid expansion gets the needed 3/4 legislative support, sort of at least. We'll explain how it all went down.
Little Rock schools will once again get a new superintendent. Some district advocates are upset as the divide between them and the Hutchinson administration appears to widen.
All that on the program covering the week of April 22nd, 2016.
I'm Chris Hickey.
And I'm Jacob Kaufman.
Well, the big news this week in the legislature was that it appears for now at least Medicaid expansion will continue in Arkansas. Getting there, though, was kind of a convoluted and complicated process. We'll try to unpack it as best we can. What I can tell you right now is that it involved a line item veto, people voting for a bill that would essentially do the thing that they didn't want it to do. Jacob, can you help me out explaining?
Well, I think you pretty much did your job. You've expressed to everyone that it's really complicated and convoluted.
Yeah.
Basically, the deal is this Arkansas Works is the continuation of Medicaid expansion, which uses money from the Affordable Care Act to give health insurance to around 250,000 low-income Arkansans. The deal is, you might recall, we had a special session some weeks back where they passed this Arkansas Works plan of the governor's, which had some new restrictions to what had been Medicaid expansion in Arkansas, known as the private option. So we're in the fiscal session now, and in the fiscal session, all these bills are budget bills, and as appropriations, most of them take a 3/4 vote for approval. So getting 75% of the legislature, even if you control every part of government like the Republican Party does, is very difficult on many issues. And to complicate it even further, this Arkansas Works program is wrapped up, as Brian King, an opponent, called it. He said it's wrapped up in a burrito, and he called Arkansas Works the rat. The burrito would be the Department of Human Services and the overall Medicaid budget, and the part that he doesn't like is the Medicaid expansion part. So they had to figure out a way to get around the blocking of just 10 senators in the state Senate. They needed two of them to flip over to support. They couldn't get through conventional negotiations. So the way they did it, they explored this line item veto tactic. And basically what it does is they put a segment in the bill that said, Arkansas Works ends at the end of this year instead of 2021. So everyone that wanted to kill the program, they got what they wanted. They got an amendment that said it will end at the end of this year. No more program into the future. However, and this was made clear by everybody involved from the governor's office, they put that in there on purpose so that they could then veto that change in the expiration date. So they would effectively continue the program into 2021. And so that procedure, of course, is complicated, and it has people on both sides kind of upset about it. Here's some Republican reaction, at least. Here's Jim Hendren, who is the governor's nephew and the Senate majority leader. Some people were saying this was a trick to get Medicaid passed, as it wasn't so straightforward. He said, it wasn't a trick.
This idea that this is some sort of trick about putting an amendment on the bill, knowing that the governor is going to be line item vetoing it, if it's a trick, it's the worst implemented trick I've ever seen. I mean, it's in the newspaper that very clearly what the governor is going to do.
Senator Bart Hester is one of those 10 Republicans who were holding up the state's entire Medicaid budget because they didn't like Medicaid expansion. And Senator Bart Hester, I spoke to him after the committee where they changed this, or not, this is on the phone actually, I think. Anyway, I spoke with Senator Hester at any rate before the vote, and he said he was fine with including this amendment because it essentially made it the bill he wanted, even though he knew that the governor's plan all along was to, in fact, continue the program and not stop it.
I intend to vote for the bill that I've asked for. You know, ultimately, I can't control whether the governor's going to veto or not. You know, I voted for many bills that I knew Governor Beebe was going to veto. I'm not the governor, and I can't control his veto power.
And so not all of the senators who are opposed came around. A lot of them thought, you know, this is just a scheme, so to speak, to continue the program in the end. But Bart Hester and Blake Johnson did flip, and that was enough, at least to get this passed for this 3/4 majority. Democrats, on the other side of the issue, they, of course, want Medicaid expansion to continue. That's a program they like. They like that it's tied to the Affordable Care Act. But because of this weird line item veto scheme, they first had to vote to end a program that they wanted to keep, knowing that the governor would then continue it later. Senate Minority Leader, Democrat Keith Ingram of West Memphis, I spoke to him on the phone too. Him and Bart Hester are both driving in their trucks that day. It was at the end of a 4-day recess that the governor had called because of this Medicaid impasse. He said that this maneuver, Democrats did have some questions about it, but ultimately they were satisfied.
The governor has said today that the bill is thoroughly vetted, does not have, in his estimation, any constitutional prohibitions. Certainly, we didn't have that information on Thursday,
lots of going back and forth between the Capitol and their home districts, I imagine, trying to maybe get some support from their constituents or something, or some recognition at least.
Very salaciously during this four-day weekend, somebody, we don't know who, they didn't print, who printed these flyers. There's a number of flyers that are very crudely done that have intentionally have misspellings and typos and poor graphic design. They were targeting those 10 senators. I think they're calling them the Hell No Caucus in these ads. They're targeting, they had one that was really bad with Senator Missy Irvin of Mountain View. She's one of the 10 who opposed Medicaid expansion. She was not there on the final day for the vote in the Senate. She was the only senator who wasn't there. She said she had a funeral to attend, but we never got to hear from her in advance how she would vote on the measure. She would never give an answer on it. They had an advertisement of her dressed up like a prostitute, basically, with her leg on a lamppost saying, like, what am I going to catch next or something, or what would the governor give me? So, you know, all these people are being targeted, and it's probably pretty heated back home.
And by the same token, I read that AFP Arkansas, Americans for Prosperity Arkansas, the day of the House vote, sent out a mass email saying that they were going to score legislators based on their vote for this bill. Of course, AFP is a conservative policy group advocating for low taxes and against government expansion.
Well, there's even one speech on the House floor when it finally passed with one vote or two votes to spare with Lori Rushing, where she even said, you know, I'm not going to be intimidated by these groups. They're saying they're going to score us and stuff like that. So it is definitely having some kind of impact. Maybe it didn't make them switch their vote, but that pressure is definitely being felt by those people.
Well, in the House, there was a similar tight margin when this bill came up for a vote. I believe only one vote to spare, a 76 to 13 vote or something like that. And a lot of the same opponents, you know, kind of cited their... There's similar concerns, you know, opposing the welfare state, opposing the expansion of government, contributing to the federal debt and so forth. I watched the proceedings. You watched the proceedings. As you mentioned, you know, some people were referencing that email sent out by AFP Arkansas. And there was a speech by State Representative Kim Hendren, who's probably the oldest member of the legislature, and has some relations to some of the folks who are pushing this policy. For instance, he's the brother-in-law of the governor, Asa Hutchinson. He's the father of State Senator Jim Hendren, who you mentioned is...
and gave the big remarks in the Senate.
Yeah, that it's not a trick, that we're being very straightforward with what we're trying to do. And Kim Hendren, in his speech on the House floor, essentially opposing the bill, even though he supports the program, cited this kind of confusion or this kind of dishonest approach that he feels the state is taking. And he referenced an email exchange between him and his son.
He says, I understand. It's not an easy issue. The only points I would make, number one, this is not an act of disobedience or sin. If we were lying or deceiving about what we were doing, I would agree. I was very clear that we should inform people of what we were doing. There would be no surprise veto. And I want the people of this state, because that's one of the reasons I'm down here, it shouldn't be a surprise. You need to know what we're doing today, and that's why one of the reasons I'm saying this. And then he says this, I can actually say that even if the governor did not veto the bill, we have a responsibility to pass an appropriation to fund DHS. This does that. We're either going to fund it with Arkansas Works or we're going to fund it without. This makes both cases possible. Just killing the appropriation is a failure of our responsibility to our constituents. And then he signed it, the old man's kid. I don't think that was necessary. This next email, you all got this one. And this is one of the reasons I'm down here making this speech, so you can understand, and so the people who sent this email can understand that my no does not mean no, and my yes does not mean yes because of this bill, the way it's written. This email that we all got says this, therefore, this group will be scoring nay and present votes as a vote consistent with opposing or ending Obamacare's Medicaid expansion, and yay votes as consistent with supporting Obamacare's Medicaid expansion. And that's where Mary Lee got after me. She says, you go down there and vote no this afternoon. They're going to put you in the paper tomorrow as being part of the bunch that was opposing this thing. And that's how, when we start doing the right thing and the wrong way, ladies and gentlemen, it just confuses me and everybody else.
So there you hear him at the end kind of referring to that AFP email saying they were going to score legislators. But Jacob, I want to kind of return to what the Democrats in the legislature have been thinking or expressing about this approach. I know that last week, for instance, the initial push for this bill in the Joint Budget Committee failed, largely because some Democrats voted against it because they needed more time. Could you kind of expand upon like why Democrats were so uneasy?
No one really knows where this line item veto scheme came from. Most people think it probably came from the governor's office. The governor has said he thought of it. Other people have said that a Democrat, this chair of joint budget, Larry Teague, thought of it. I asked him and he said, oh, he's just a simple country lawyer. He couldn't be creative enough to think of that scheme, although he could implement it plenty fine. Basically, the deal last week is they had this amendment after it gridlocked in the Senate. They couldn't get the two votes, so they went to joint budget to insert the special language to change the bill to make it pass. And the idea then was that they were going to, instead of it be the expiration date of 2016, instead of 2021, they were going to have a line, they were going to have a line item veto over the funding instead of the expiration date, so to speak. But basically, a lot of Democrats at the time said they only heard about the plan through the Arkansas Times blog, or they only heard about it maybe an hour before the actual vote. So they're pretty much just uncomfortable with it because they had to essentially put their trust in the governor that he would end up vetoing this program in the end, and they didn't want to be caught off guard on that. So they spent the four-day recess talking about that, working with the governor. Evidently, Senator Keith Ingram talked with the governor a little bit. Clark Tucker is someone the governor is credited with crafting this new amendment, or helping it to at least. So Democrats said basically this week that they don't like the procedure. They still don't like that it was done this way, but they're not going to let their pride get in the way of health insurance for 270,000 low-income people.
All right. And on Thursday afternoon, the governor issued his line item veto, essentially continuing the program. But at the same time, there is some talk of a potential special session to kind of ensure the legality of this method, or to ensure the continuation of Medicaid expansion, regardless of what happened here.
Well, a lot of the speeches on the floor this week were not really about whether Medicaid expansion is good or bad. It's a lot about this precedence being set through this new procedure to get around the three-fourths vote, so to speak. And so while the backers of this plan, this line item veto plan, they still maintain, of course, that it is legal. They have no doubt about it. Of course, it's fine to use it. That's why they're using it. They want to safeguard, is the word they're kind of using, against any possible legal challenges. Because the debate on the House and Senate floor, most of the people opposed to it were saying, you know, this procedure is bad. Even if there were four Arkansas Works, they thought it was a little too messy. I ran into Senate President Jonathan Dismang right after taping Arkansas Week, along with Steve Bronner, Talk Business, and he's, you know, I asked him a little bit about the line item veto tactic, and he said, well, we might actually have another special session, or include it in another special session on something else, where we would essentially restate that the program really ends at 2021 instead of 2016. So it would look kind of crazy in the bill, because at this point, they struck out the language that said 2021 and put 2016. The governor wrote a line through that and wrote in the margin, no, really 2021. And now this committee, if they do it again, they'll have to come back and then strike through the governor's note that says 2021 and put 2021 again. So it'll look kind of odd, but they just want to do it. It's just one more safeguard, so to speak, against a legal challenge where the legislature is saying, yes, that was our intention here. We're showing you right after the fact we voted for it. And the reason why it's easier to do in a special session is because it only takes a majority vote instead of the three-fourths vote for a fiscal bill.
Yeah, and it was all predicated under the assumption that the legislature, the opponents of the legislature, wouldn't be able to override the line item veto. Do you still think they might try to bring it up for an override vote, despite?
You never know. There might be like one or two guys that want to, but it's not going to work. I think everybody knows it's not going to work. Several people, including Cecile Bledsoe of Rogers, she's one of the people who never voted for it, even though her son is the Surgeon General appointed by the governor who is for the plan. You know, they basically said, we don't have the votes. It didn't work. And one of the big differences is we've had this debate like year after year after year after year. And I guess we could still have it every fiscal session, every 2 years. But the policy legislation is at least through 2021 at this point now.
Well, in other news this week, surprising news to a lot of people, especially in the Little Rock area, kind of came out Monday or Tuesday night earlier this week. kind of leaked that Superintendent Baker Curse of the Little Rock School District will be leaving his post at the end of this fiscal year, which ends on June 30th, or begins on the new fiscal year begins on July 1st. Of course, as we know, the Little Rock School District has been under state control for over a year after six academically distressed schools were found to be the reason for the State Board of Education to vote for control and dissolving the locally elected school board. State Education Commissioner Johnny Key now effectively serves as the school board and has hiring and firing authority over the superintendent. He had installed Baker Curris back when former Superintendent Dexter Suggs got embroiled in a plagiarism scandal. He was found that his dissertation might have been plagiarized. That was later corroborated by the university, which gave it to him. And
in which Sarah White's Coda Check broke.
Yeah, our own KUAR's Sarah White's Coda Check actually broke that story. And props to her for following the district. Too bad she couldn't be here today for some more contextual information, because she has been following the Little Rock School District. And if you want to, you know, learn more and background and so forth, check out her articles, your articles, Jacob. Anyways, enough of this shameless plug time. Jake, you were following this from the very beginning, that evening that news broke, that Baker Curris would be out. Who's going to be replacing him? What went into this decision? And, you know, what was the reaction?
Following it is a pretty glamorous word for like sitting on Twitter and reading emails, but I did it. It's true.
Yeah.
It all happened pretty late at night. They announced that Education Commissioner Johnny Key announced he would not be renewing the contract of Baker Curris. He wasn't fired necessarily. His contract ends, I think, at the end of June. They're not going to renew it. And that night, they said that they would reveal the new superintendent in the morning. However, up in Bentonville, the superintendent, Michael Poor, announced to the school board up there that evening that he would not be returning to Bentonville and he'd be coming to Little Rock. So we got the news a little bit early, not exactly in the message control way the Department of Education wanted. And of course, all this happened at the same time as this Medicaid fight, which upset every Democratic state senator in Little Rock who the governor was asking to trust him on this Medicaid expansion line item veto. He then irritated them to no end that evening, which played out a little bit throughout the week, but ultimately they're going to vote for the program. Mm-hmm. But back to the Little Rock School District, Johnny Key said the reason he made this decision is that Baker Curris was more of an organizational manager, that he was familiar with the district, he knew how to run businesses, and that he set up the administration, so to speak, to get the district running well. But Johnny Key said that Michael Poor is more of he's going to trust him to do some of the academic changes, which kind of is a weird thing to say. You don't want to say your previous superintendent wasn't doing things to make the district better academically since it was an academic distress, but that's where we are at least. This decision by the state board, or not by the state board, but by Johnny Key, who serves as the school board for Little Rock School District, it infuriated just about every kind of civic group in Little Rock that you could name. The Teachers Association, the Chamber of Commerce even put out a statement, all the usual activists you see in Little Rock School District, most of the state representatives, even Mayor Mark Stodola. And a lot of it was because it's mostly not even so much about this Michael Poor guy from Bentonville, who we don't know a lot about yet, simply because he hasn't done any interviews with anybody yet from Little Rock media. KTV even traveled up there 4 hours to do an interview, and he canceled on him and sent him a paragraph statement when they're already there. So hopefully we'll hear from Michael Poor soon. But here's Mayor Mark Stodola, at least, who doesn't really weigh into these kind of discussions that much, at least. The city does not control the school district. Here's Mark Stodola on why he thinks he kind of commented on Baker Curris's exit. And a lot of people suspected that Johnny Key didn't want him anymore because Baker Curris stood up against two charter school expansions in the district lately, which most people think Johnny Key traditionally backs.
I think people that don't want to discuss that are ignoring what was really behind this decision, is that Baker, I think, and I've talked to him about it, I mean, he respects charter schools. He knows there's a place for them. The only thing I've ever heard him say is that, you know, give me a chance to get these schools back out from under academic distress, and then we'll compete with any charter school there is in the country.
And here's Stodola just commenting in general on something that a lot of people in Little Rock are frustrated with. There's just a lot of instability in that position, no matter if it's the state in control or the local board.
We we've had, on average, a different superintendent every 18 months since 1988. That's ridiculous. And this is just another further example of the state thinking they know more than the citizens of Little Rock do for what are needed for our kids. I think it's the wrong decision, and I'm going to make my voice known about it.
Karen Trico-Stewart did that interview with Mayor Stodola, which you can also find online in some larger article about this. What we do know about Michael Poore, though, at this point, the superintendent of Bentonville. Bentonville, of course, is in the heartland of all the Walton Family Foundation wealth, and they're a group that, by and large, promotes charter school advocacy. They're in some ways behind a bill that would help privatize certain school districts that failed in the legislature last year. Michael Poore, though, he was first a deputy superintendent at a Colorado school. He was known for closing a lot of schools while he was there. I guess somebody had to do it, but he was the one who was closing the schools in that district. That's an experience that Little Rock is likely to go through. At least the state before has said that some schools they believe should be closed in Little Rock, which makes a lot of the lower-income African-American neighborhoods pretty upset about it. Most of those schools are in those neighborhoods. He's been superintendent up in Bentonville since about 2011. That's a more white and affluent district. So Michael Poore doesn't really have any experience with low-income African-American kids, at least. He knows this coming in there. He must be up for the challenge in some way, but we just haven't got a chance to hear from him yet. KUAR has had interview requests out to Johnny Key and Michael Poore, and it's not happening so far.
Yeah, and part of this, or part of what people have speculated, a lot of commentators out in the political scene locally, is that Baker Curris may have been removed because he spoke out against charter expansions back when the Lisa Academy and ESTEM charter schools were proposing to expand by nearly 3,000 students before the State Board of Education. Their proposals were ultimately approved. Curris had presented a lot of data arguing that these charter schools do not cater to low-income, free and reduced lunch, special interest,
special needs.
Sorry, to the degree that Little Rock Public Schools do, and it would essentially drain Little Rock Public Schools of those.
The more easily taught.
The more easily taught. Yeah. While at the same time, Little Rock schools are under this mandate to improve academic performance throughout, and you know, how can you do that if your highest ranking students are leaving the district for other schools?
A lot of people point to it that people who didn't like the state takeover, they, since the state took over the school district because they said the local school board doesn't have a comprehensive plan that they can see to get these schools out of academic distress, they now point to the state and say, okay, State Board of Education, Johnny Key, where is the public plan to get these people out of academic distress? And there isn't one. They can't give you one.
Yeah, and that speaks to Mayor Stodola's and others' remarks that it creates still more instability, or at least the appearance of instability. And even, you know, the local teachers union, the Little Rock Teachers Association, Little Rock Education Association, is holding a rally in support of Curris this weekend. Curris even had to renegotiate a contract with them earlier, last year, I believe.
Or earlier this year.
Yeah, earlier this year in his tenure. you know, essentially stripping them of some of their, you know, some of their concerns, some of their interests, I guess.
But they're still going to bat for him, even though.
Right. Yeah. Because I think there's a wide ranging a widely held sentiment that, you know, Curris lives here in the community. He was a member of the school board for over a decade, you know, in the early 2000s, and that he knows the school and the racial dynamics of the city, which are pretty much at the forefront of any major public education discussion in this area.
Yeah, you know, I was looking back to when Baker Curris was first appointed, because his appointment wasn't accepted by all by any means. Mm-hmm. But back then, Johnny Key said that Little Rock schools, because of the state takeover especially, needed someone from Little Rock to offer Little Rock solutions. So that's not the case, at least with this pick, with Michael Poore. And, you know, he also set up a civic advisory group after the state takeover, saying we're going to take this seriously and get our input and make our decisions by receiving information from people here. But then at the press conference the other day, Johnny Key said that it was his decision to make a loan. He did not consult with any of these outside groups. So there's, you know, I think the big frustration isn't necessarily even about this guy yet. It probably will be once some decisions are made. It's just about you're supposed to be the local school board, Commissioner Johnny Key, and you won't talk to anybody about your decisions or anybody in the community anyway.
Yeah. But at the same time, in defense of Poor and Key, Poor does appear to have the required credentials that most school superintendents need to operate in Arkansas, those credentials having an academic background, a doctoral degree.
And you're saying this because they had to waive the qualifications to get
Baker Kerr's, yeah.
And for Johnny Key's position, too.
Yeah. Right, yeah. So in a way, he's more credentialed. He bears more of the traditional credentials Poor does that a school superintendent would need in Arkansas. But at the same time, there are all these other issues floating about, and I don't know, it'll be an interesting time to certainly see how he transitions to this community.
Smooth sailing is certainly not like a phrase you could use to describe the administration of the district, though, in the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, or really in the past year or so. But, yeah, so.
Well, this is one thing I thought of, this last comment I have on this. Baker, one of the big decisions Baker Kurtz made was to open a new middle school in West Little Rock. And that was primarily to get a lot of affluent white people from West Little Rock that had been leaving the district for private schools and charter schools and other things to try to retain students there. There's not a lot of other schools out there, so that was going to be their offering. And he promised in the future to open a high school in Southwest Little Rock. The school board that was dissolved had promised to open them both at the same time or none of them at all. So we've got the funding. They're going to move forward with the West Little Rock one for sure. Southwest Little Rock, that was just a promise by a superintendent who's not there anymore.
Well, thanks for joining us. This has been another edition of KUAR's Week in Review podcast, a look at Arkansas news, politics, and more. KUAR is a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas at Little Rock. Although we are editorially independent, you can find our podcast on iTunes. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. I'm Jacob Kaufman.
I'm Chris Hickey.
Thanks for doing the theme music, Chris.
You're welcome.